Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
SoCal's Country Station, 95.1 K-Frog. I'm Pepper. This is Spirit of the IE. The Corona Fire Safety Foundation will host a Fire in the Hole Cornhole Tournament this Saturday, October 26th, from noon to 4 at Rockin' Brews in Corona. Here to tell us more is Fire Chief for the Corona Fire Department, Brian Young. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Start by giving us a brief overview of the Corona Fire Department's operations and the areas you serve.
Most people are probably familiar with Corona, being from the Inland Empire. Corona is on the far western portion of the county. Interesting geographic perspective is that we're right next to Orange County. We're next to San Bernardino County, and we're actually in Riverside County. So it makes us kind of a cul-de-sac, if you will. Approximately 170,000 people. Corona Fire Department serves those 170,000 people from seven strategically placed fire stations that are based throughout the city, determined by response times. Roughly 40 square miles. And those of you that have driven through Corona know that there's a very large, busy freeway called the 91, as well as the 15 freeway. So we're supported by those two freeways, not always at a very good speed, though.
How many stations and firefighters make up the Corona Fire Department, and what are their primary responsibilities?
Great question. So there's seven strategically placed fire stations throughout the city. They all have the same type of coverage with either EMT or a BLS firefighter or an ALS or paramedic. Many people know that term paramedicine. Those seven stations are served by just over 110 professional firefighters. And then there's a support staff of professionals that are approximately 20 to 30 that provide all the ancillary support for those emergency responders.
What is the core mission of the Corona Fire Department, and how do you ensure that mission is met daily?
Yeah, so it's probably no shock to anybody. The core mission is to save life, property, and the environment. And so we do that, obviously, as our primary mission is to respond to 911 or emergency calls. But it's important to know that a lot of people don't understand that the fire service is a lot more than going to fires. There's this assumption that, oh, you're a firefighter, you go to fires. That's what you do all the time. And when in reality, fires are very, very low frequency. Obviously, they're high risk, but the highest propensity of calls that we go on is emergency medical response. And most of our service delivery is driven around rapid, effective emergency service delivery for medical calls. It's very, very common.
Corona is a growing community. How do you ensure that the fire department keeps up with the increasing demand for services?
It's something that all the fire service deals with on a regular basis. One of the niceties with a city the size of Corona, it allows us to be a little bit more nimble than some large, gigantic organizations. So the way we stay on top of that is we look at ways that we can change our service delivery model that will increase services, but without increasing significant costs. So a great example of that would be is we recently put into service what we're calling low acuity response units. It's a single pickup truck with two firefighter paramedics on it, and they go on low acuity emergency responses that wouldn't necessitate a large number of responders because they're not acute in nature. You know, a great example would be a musculoskeletal injury, a twisted knee, somebody with flu-like symptoms really does not necessitate a fire engine with three or four people to show up, block somebody's residential neighborhood. So that is something that we put in service a couple years ago, and it's been highly effective. It gets people to the scene in a rapid time with less footprint, whether it be physically or individual bodies, and then it leaves the fire engines in service for more critical calls.
Are there any new initiatives or improvements that you're particularly excited about for the future of the Corona Fire Department?
Oh, absolutely. We're finally at the finish line for what we're referring to as a field blood transfusion program. We're looking to be the first fire agency in the Western United States, really, I should say the West Coast, to provide this service. The reason why not more people do it is because there's obviously a supply chain issue. If we're talking about carrying blood in the field and you do that at scale, you see how there's a lot of blood needed to do that. But a lot of the pre-existing programs that are out there are having amazing successes with increasing survivability for critical trauma patients. A great example would be car accidents where there is a significant amount of blood loss. we will now have the ability to transfuse blood products in the field before they arrive to the trauma centers. Mm-hmm. So their chance of survival significantly increases with this added feature. So we've been working on it for a couple of years, and we're finally at the finish line. So I'm excited to say in January, we'll be fully live. And unless somebody beats us to the punch, because there's a couple other agencies that are competing to be first, we'll take second, but we're really shooting to be first.
What role does the community play in supporting the fire department, and how can residents get involved in helping promote fire safety?
That's an amazing question. I wish more people would get involved, but let me give you some great examples where something very simplistic, it doesn't have to be a big heavy time lift. Something as simple as learning CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, can make a life-changing impact to a single individual. One of the things that is important to note is when somebody suffers a sudden cardiac arrest, their chance of survival drops 10% every minute that their heart's not beating. So if you unpack the math, basically chance of survival is almost non-existent after 10 minutes. So something as simple as receiving CPR from a bystander will greatly enhance the survivability of that person. And one of the things too that I share all the time with people when I talk about CPR, the majority of cardiac arrests occur in the residential setting. So who's in a residential setting? Your family, your friends, your loved ones. So this fear of doing CPR wrong or potential liability, which does not exist for a layperson or a non-sworn rescuer, it's not there. So knowing something as simple as learning CPR to save your family member's life is a significant change. And I'll tell you right now, when our responders are going to a 911 call and they know it's a cardiac arrest, and they hear that CPR is in progress prior to our arrival, it changes their affect. It changes their hope to make a positive impact. So that is a significant positive that people could do very simply. And it doesn't take a lot. And a lot of evolution's taken place in cardiopulmonary resuscitation where we don't even have to give mouth to mouth any longer, right? So that's what scares people a lot of times. I don't want to get cooties, you know, I don't want to be sued. So both of those things are completely erased for the public. So that's a significant, relatively easy thing for people to do that can change the outcome of somebody living or dying.
Tell us about the community outreach programs or partnerships that the Corona Fire Department is currently involved in.
Okay, that's great. We have three primary initiatives. The first one is our Corona Fire Safety Foundation, and it's a nonprofit that was stood up decades ago to support ancillary functions of the fire service that's not generally public funded, right? It's not funded through tax measures. So some of the big initiatives that that group is working on right now that will be the byproduct of this upcoming fundraiser is to put AEDs or automated external defibrillators. So when people have a cardiac arrest, the thing that shocks them basically, we're putting those in all of our public parks in the city where there's team sports. So the propensity of a cardiac arrest in a park is much greater if there's team sports there. So we're putting these in all of our parks, and that's a big initiative that the foundation's been working on. And then secondarily, they've been spending a lot of time and energy to support our Fire Explorer program, which is the future firefighters entering the program. And then lastly, our Honor Guard, which you'll see a lot of times on TV and news stories where they're representing at funerals or other high profile events. And they're really the flag bearers, if you will. You know, they're the highly polished professionals, or they're representing the fire service as well as our department. And they have a lot of support needs as well. Just their uniforms and their equipment is very expensive, and it's an added feature. So we seek exterior support for that. So that's one big initiative, the Corona Fire Safety Foundation. The second one is Fire Safe Corona. It's another nonprofit that the agency partners with that's been in effect or in place for approximately 2 years. And the primary role and responsibility of that is for wildfire awareness and prevention. Those of you that are familiar where Corona is, over half of the city is bordered by the Cleveland National Forest, right? Which is a very, very common fire corridor. So the secondary nonprofit that's associated with the agency, Fire Safe Corona, is another great opportunity for people to get engaged. And then lastly, one that is a national program is called CERT, Community Emergency Response Teams. And what this is where people from the public want to learn some skills that they can be self-sufficient for a short period of time should a disaster strike. So no matter what city we're looking at in let's just say this region, Riverside County, there is a fixed number of resources that can respond. And the reality of it is if we have a significant disaster, it's going to be a delay for enough resources to get here to take care of each and every person. That's not like a wonderfully warm feeling, I know, sometimes, but at the same time, it also triggers people to say, maybe I should be a little bit self-sufficient so I could take care of myself and my neighbors for the short term until ample resources arrive. So these training programs are very effective. It's a relevantly low impact. I mean, you have to be committed. It takes about, 32 hours to 40 hours of training. But once you're trained, you are a certified CERT emergency responder. They teach them basic things like basic first aid, obviously CPR, how to put out a fire with a fire extinguisher, how to shore up a building if you have a minor impact. So it's another great opportunity that most of the fire agencies in Riverside County participate in. And then once again, at a higher level nationally. And all these resources are available out there just with simple Google searches, Corona Fire Safety Foundation, Fire Safe Corona, and CERT. So there's a lot out there that people can get involved and make an impact.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm speaking with Corona Fire Chief Brian Young. With fire season being such a concern in California, what preventative measures does the Corona Fire Department recommend for residents, especially those in high-risk areas?
The biggest thing is to keep a defensible space around your property. Most of these fires that impact areas that are in wildland urban interfaces or areas that are adjacent to wildland threat areas have the ability to protect themselves if they make some simple changes. Some things are not necessarily aesthetically appealing. People love palapas. They love wood patio covers, wood fences, all of those things become ladder materials that move a fire from a wildland area into your property. So keeping everything clean and neat and tidy is one of the best ways. If you happen to live in a homeowners association, there's other mechanisms that you can impart in that can help from a regional perspective. We know that there's a significant impact right now with the insurance issues for people that live in wildland interface areas. And making some of these changes to your property, as well as with your HOAs to become what are called FireWise communities, can positively impact the frequency of cancellations as well as rates. So those are some of the examples. And then all of this information is available with simple Google searches about how do I harden my home? How do I make things safe? Or back to my statement, Fire Safe Corona is an excellent resource, has a standalone website that gives people the tools and techniques necessary to make their home hardened.
Tell us about some of the new technologies or strategies that your department is using to improve fire service.
So we touched on our field blood transfusion program, and that's something we're super excited about. There's various other things that we're starting to put our feet in the water, if you will, to give an analogy. One of those is virtual reality. So, you know, anybody that is of a younger age is very familiar with virtual reality. Now, obviously, more senior tenured people like myself, you're like, what are you talking about? So we're leaning in pretty heavily on virtual reality training for our people in-house, so they don't always have to go to a drill tower and train physically with the heat and the potential contaminants and carcinogens. So they can do so in a nice climate-controlled environment with a virtual reality headset on, and it teaches them some of the repeated skills and techniques necessary to do their job. Now, obviously, we'd never want to replace hands-on for everything, right? But if you can add variety to how you train and give that option, because everybody's a different type of learner. So the virtual reality is something we're really excited about. And then we're also taking it a step further. We're going to use it in our public outreach. What better way at a community event? You have a virtual reality studio set up with a bunch of firefighters. You know for a fact it's going to draw attention from young folks. So that's one thing. And then we're very excited to lean into other things that may not be something as simple as just a technology piece like VR, but we're also embarking on what's called Tele-911. And what that is it's another way to process low acuity emergency responses, so we're not taking patients to the hospitals. Many people have probably heard some of the issues that we have at hospitals with what's called wall time, where patients are stuck in the ER, and then it trickles down, they get stuck in the ER, then the ambulance is stuck with the patient, and then the ambulance is not available to go on the next critically acute call. Mm. So this Tele-911 is very similar to what happened with the virtual MDs during the COVID crisis. So we do the same thing now on these low acuity calls. We'll get a unit on scene. They'll determine the person does not need to be transported to the hospital, but they need medical care. They'll get on their tablet on scene. They'll contact a doctor. The doctor will validate their assessment, write them a prescription if needed. It will be delivered to the residents. And then the doctor will schedule a follow-up visit with the person on whatever technology they're using. Our units go back in service. There's nobody getting in an ambulance, and no hospital is being crowded with a patient that doesn't need to be there.
As you mentioned, beyond firefighting, CoronaFire also provides emergency medical services. Tell us more about the types of medical emergencies the department typically responds to.
So it's full spectrum. We've touched a little bit on low acuity, and that's stuff that many people wouldn't be calling 911 for. But the reality is sometimes 911 is people's only medical access, right? So you have a variety of users for the 911 system. There's people that use it in lieu of any kind of healthcare, which isn't necessarily the best, but it is a reality. And then you have the ones that are very acute patients, people that are suffering a stroke, a sudden cardiac arrest, or a significant breathing emergency. So with those all come specialized technology as well. So one of the things that has evolved from the cardiac arrest or the cardiac emergency situation is we're looking at more and more ways in the fire service to bring the skills and tools from the emergency room out to the field. So two of those examples would be a video laryngoscope. So when somebody is in a cardiac arrest, they're not breathing, we put a tube down their throat in the field. You've probably seen this on TV shows. And what that tube is that's how we hook up the ability to breathe for them when they're not able to breathe. So the new technology now has a video screen with a camera on it. So before, what used to be the human eye looking in this anatomical field, now the camera is capturing it, it blows it up, and it makes their job much easier. And then secondarily, many people are very familiar with sonograms, right? That type of technology. So we actually use that as well to listen for very faint heart sounds. And that ultrasound device can hear a heartbeat that is not distinguishable to a human ear. So once again, we're using technology to be more effective and efficient with our jobs.
I'm speaking with Corona Fire Chief Brian Young. How has the Corona Fire Department adapted to handle other types of emergencies like earthquakes or floods or hazardous material incidents?
I'll speak more specifically to the fire service in the Western U.S., right? Because every part of the country is a little bit different. They all have amazing skill sets and specializations, but obviously California has its own distinct threat profile, right? So what has happened with the fire service, including Corona, is we've become all risk service providers, right? Back to the original, when fire departments were created, they go to fires. That's all they do. But now with the great variety of disasters and catastrophes and emergencies that occur, we are truly what is called all risk fire agencies. So we handle fires, we handle emergency medical services or EMS, and we obviously handle natural disasters as well. And I'll give you a perfect example of that. The Riverside County region, including the city of Corona and the city of Riverside, participate in the FEMA Urban Search and Rescue Program. There's 28 teams throughout the nation that are strategically located to respond to major disasters that may be occurring. So right now we have a team from Riverside County Urban Search and Rescue Task Force 6 who's deployed to the East Coast in North Carolina working. The Western U.S. has 8 of these teams. 8 of the 28 are on the western part of the country. And they do it based on the threat profile in that area. So obviously the South is hurricanes. The central part of the nation is tornadoes. It seems like Texas, a lot of flooding. And then the Western U.S. is predominantly focused on earthquakes. But we have all of those other things. Any of these disasters can occur anywhere. So that's a great example of the evolution of the fire service to do everything. And we're deployed all over the nation. Here's a great example, right? Resources from Riverside County are serving the crisis in North Carolina right now.
What are some of the biggest challenges the Corona Fire Department faces today, both operationally and in terms of resources?
A lot of it is tied to whatever is currently occurring, right? If we have a major wildland fire that's in the region or even out of the region, and then we start getting a second and a third and a fourth, we are all impacted because we get what's called drawdown. We don't have an infinite amount of resources, right? So at any given time, one third of a fire department is working. So if you looked at whatever business model you want to look at, we have one third of our workforce working at any given time. If one third of that workforce is then out fighting fires somewhere else, you're now left with two thirds of your workforce. Well, you need that one third to continue to protect the city. So you see how it's like this constant moving availability of what's there, what you can send, what you can share. And we all have to work on this collaboratively because there will be a time and place that every agency needs other people to help them. So they have to be good ambassadors to the system. So staffing is a big issue. It's a great profession for people to get in. It's the optimal time for it. I know looking at people generationally when they got hired, the number of candidates that are competing is significantly lower every decade than it was. I'll give you a point of reference. When I got hired a long, long time ago, over 3,000 people waited in line at Angel Stadium for 50 positions. So you don't see those numbers anymore. It's just not commonly occurring. And I'm not sure what's driving that, but that is an enduring problem that the fire service will have to solve. It's just attrition and retention.
What kind of training do your firefighters undergo to stay prepared for this wide range of emergencies you talked about?
So it's very set. They have to have a training schedule, right? Obviously, there's that whole premise of low frequency, high risk. We have to make sure that our skills are honed on those fires or fighting fires, and we create muscle memory so people don't have to think about their actions in those situations. And then obviously, with a constant evolution of emergency medical services, that is a routine training that we also need to go and participate in, whether it be just through didactic or computer-based learning or hands-on. So there's a variety of that. And then there's other things too that we've really leaned into and embraced as an organization. And those are the things that are more the soft skills that people a lot of times will forget. Well, we're an organization just like anybody else. So we need to provide leadership training. We need to provide coaching and accountability. We recently sent the entire organization through a training that was focused on emotional intelligence. So there's a lot more to the job than just what everybody would assume is it, you know, fighting fires and going on 911 calls. Well, you need all those soft skills behind that to make the amazing firefighters that we currently have stay amazing.
Given the intense nature of their work, how does the department support the mental and physical well-being of its firefighters?
So the fire service in general has really leaned into this premise. Physical and mental wellness are very closely aligned. So probably no shock, you know, firefighters for decades have been focused on their physical fitness and staying in shape and getting the training in necessary to maintain that readiness from a physical perspective. But one of the things we've realized more significantly over the last decade is the significant long-term mental impacts to firefighters from cumulative trauma they're exposed to. So that being said, our agency, not unlike most agencies in the region, are heavily investing in training our personnel to be peer support. So there's a select group of people who volunteer to be trained peer supporters for our people. So they have somebody they can go to, they can deal with after a catastrophic incident of debriefing, defusing, those sort of things. And then another thing that is becoming more common that we're excited about at the Corona Fire Department is after the first year, we'll take delivery of our first peer support dog. So many of you have probably seen the peer support canines out there in the world. So we're going to get our very own peer support canine at the Corona Fire Department. And he's already named because they've already training him, right? And his name's Rocket. So it's kind of a cool name for a fire dog.
What's the one thing you wish more people in Corona knew about the fire department or the work that firefighters do?
That there's more to the 911 calls, right? I mean, that's obviously, you want the fire department to show up on your worst day. But there's a lot more to the fire service that keeps the community safe. There's a lot more people that support the fire department than just the firefighters. So really, what I want everybody to know is that, yes, we will be there on your worst day, but there are other things that we do that will support the community. And there's other things the community can do to support us and each other. Just the premise of taking a couple hours and learning CPR, I just cannot reinforce that enough. I mean, I'm biased. My father, who's still alive today, has been saved two times by bystander CPR. So proof of concept is a real deal. I'm a living proof of that. And I just would encourage people to realize that they can be an active part of their fire department outside of calling us when they need us.
Before we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to share with the community or any final message you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I'm just excited by the potential for people to participate in the cornhole tournament. I think it's a great opportunity to network with other people that are like-minded in the community. They want to support the organization as well as the endeavors that we're putting the money into, and knowing that it will positively impact the department, the community, and everybody that's involved. So it's a super exciting event. I hope people jump on it and come have a good time.
The Corona Fire Safety Foundation's Fire in the Hole Cornhole Tournament will take place this Saturday, October 26th from noon to 4 at Rock and Brews in Corona. How can we sign up for this event?
So basically, they're posting the flyer on the KFrog site, is my understanding, as well as reaching out to Corona Fire at cityofcorona.ca. There'll be information there posted as well. It's relatively easy to find with a Google search, like everything else, right? and that's where you can sign up. You can come and just have some beers at Rock and Brews and watch the show, or, you know, we would encourage people to put together a team. It's very fun. The levels of competition is obviously people that are incredibly good at cornhole and others that are not so good, which is the section I fall into. But it's still fun because then you're competing with other people that are not so good.
I've been speaking with Corona Fire Chief Brian Young. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Thank you for all that you do for our community. And I hope this Saturday's cornhole tournament is a huge success.
Thanks for having me.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.